Sit on down and pour yourself a glass.
And tune into your favorite podcast.
Where things will be misquoted.
And opinions ain't sugar-coated.
'Cause DJ and Kelly are locked and probably loaded.
Hey guys! Welcome to Locked and Probably Loaded with DJ and Kelly. I'm your host, DJ Qualls, and I'm here with my co-host. Say your name.
Kelly.
Kelly Blackheart. Guys, today we're going to have an upbeat, positive podcast about something that I want to talk about. It's gratitude, but I just hate the word gratitude because it's so overused. So instead, I'm going to call it coming from a place of yes. And how that has altered my life in particular with one decision that I said no to and was bullied into saying yes. Actually, I was it was an ego situation that made me say yes. The other thing that's overused with gratitude, aside from gratitude, is I noticed that everything on social media now are people telling you the signs of narcissists. So much so that I'm now convinced that the people who are telling you about narcissism are narcissists.
Yeah, narcissist has gotten thrown around so much because a lot of people have narcissistic traits, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're a narcissist. But now narcissist, gaslighting, what's the other one? Boundaries have, those are like the hot three terms.
But like every single video is somebody looking directly to camera talking about narcissism with the points being, you know,
brushing their hair.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot, so much so that I don't even know what a narcissist is because I have to fast forward them. I have to like get away from them now. Anyway, guys, so this episode is basically a love letter to all the people who love Supernatural and to the cast and crew. And I've never had a job in my life that has made as much of a significant impact. And I would like to talk to you about that path. And Kelly actually got to go with me to a Creation Supernatural show in Hawaii this year to sort of see it firsthand. And
it was freaking like, truly, that's why I was so excited to do this, because your fans are so sweet. Like,
they're the best.
I really enjoyed meeting everybody there in Hawaii, but even then, since we've started this podcast, like the people who comment and people who have subscribed to Patreon and all that stuff, a lot of them are Supernatural people and they're so nice and they've like really brought me into the fold. That was like a big concern versus like excitement too, because I'm like, oh, they could hate me because they just want to be here to listen to DJ, but they've been so fucking sweet. Supernatural is amazing.
They're your fans too, and they're your friends, and they support you, and I've read some of the stuff they said about you, and it was super nice. Supernatural fandom is the absolute best, but I almost missed out on it because I was getting into how I got on Supernatural. I was doing a movie with Sandra Bullock, and it was during the time when the tabloids had a field day about her marriage. Her husband, you know, cheated on her. And I know it's not really gossiping, but it feels like gossip because I was there during it. But it became such a heavy thing. And then to watch her come to work every day, knowing the paparazzi were everywhere around our sets. And it just became, it was a fun movie, but it was an exhausting experience. And also there were environmental things. So when you swim in a movie, it's always wintertime. When you're wearing winter clothes, it's always summer in the Mojave Desert, right? Yeah. And it was. And so we were wearing winter coats in the Mojave Desert. And that's when I learned the snow cone trick. Did I ever tell you about the snow cone trick? Mm-mm. So we had a snow cone machine on set. I have a snow cone machine at my house.
Yeah, it's one of the best things I've ever bought. I told you to get it.
I love, oh yeah, you did. Snow cone machines.
Changed your life.
How did I function before I met you?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I love snow cones. I love crushed ice. I love chewing ice. So I have that second one right there, the Hawaiian ice shaved one. Hold on, go back.
I don't even remember how it came up. You were just like, I wish I could just go get a snow cone. And I was like, I have a snow cone machine. You're like, you can buy those? And I was like,
yes.
You had it the next day. And you're like, my life is amazing.
I love it. I have, in the summertime, I have like four a day. My tongue and teeth are always blue or red.
Yeah.
Anyway, so on that movie, we were shooting in the Mojave Desert. And we were pretending that it was winter in Oklahoma, so I was wearing a full winter coat, and
which is generally what you wear in the Mojave Desert.
Yeah,
anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, who am I trying to fool? I was wearing my beach parka in the Mojave Desert, But it was a grueling shoot. It was a hard shoot.
He's looking up how many snow cones can you eat in one day? Infinite.
You might call me crazy for saying this, but snow cones cause cancer in laboratory rats.
It says eating snow cones for a meal actually helps in terms of dieting. No, that's how, that actually might be an eating disorder. Yeah, don't that, replace yeah, exactly. a regular diet with frozen water. Just yeah. as a guide.
How do you stay so thin? Snow cones. Wow, did your arm just break? Yes. So anyway, it was a really tough shoot, and we wrapped, and I got home like on a Sunday, and then on Monday morning, I got a call asking if I wanted to go to Vancouver on Thursday to shoot Supernatural. And I was like, 100%, absolutely, I do not want to go to Vancouver on Thursday. I'm tired. Mm-hmm. And back then, we shot on film, and movies took months and months and months to film. And I wasn't feeling it. And so a couple of days went by and the producers reached out to me and said, we wrote this for you. And I was like, oh, these motherfuckers are appealing to my
they
ego.
They know me.
Like, yeah, we've clearly met. But it wasn't the first time something had been written for me. The first time something had been written for me in a while. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I turned the show down just off the face of it, just not even reading it. I was like, I don't want to go to Vancouver. I'm tired. Mm-hmm. And an attempt to do some self-care. And they told me that they wrote it for me. And I was like, fine, send me the script. And also send me a couple of episodes of the show because I've never seen it. And then I watched it. And it's two guys, handsome guys who... And this is what I took from it because I fast-forwarded through it because it's not for me. I was like, it's two underwear models chasing monsters. And I was like, so it's a definite no, because I'm not going to be on a show where I'm not just less good looking than the two leads, but such a deficit of good looking that I would never be able to watch it ever again, and I would feel terrible about myself. So I said no, and then a couple days later, they were really persistent. They really wanted me for this, and I was like, oh, fine, I'll come and do it. And then I went up there and had a great time. They have these sandwiches on Thursday. They're the best sandwiches I've ever had. They must have crack in them. They are... When people ask me...
What was the most memorable time about your time on Supernatural? The sandwiches.
The hot sandwiches on Fridays were so damn good. But also, it was a big budget production. Those kind of don't exist anymore. There was catering and two kinds of soups. Mm-hmm. I love soup. Mm-hmm. And I love Vancouver a lot. And I really grew to love being on the show. And also, my second episode, they gave me my chair back with my name on it, which is, these people clearly know me. But also, I was being written for. And I think for TV, that was the first time that ever happened. The more they got to know me, the more they were writing things that were really in my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And I really grew to love playing the character of Garth, who is just a beacon of love. And... also, but it's not unconditional love because he puts boundaries up. Like, hey, you can't do this. You can't mm-hmm. do this to me. And like, he loved the character Dean so much. But when Bobby died, and this will make sense to Supernatural fans, he was mourning the loss of him. And Dean's like, shut up. He was ours. And I'm like, he was mine. He was mine too. You mm-hmm. can't talk to me like this. Mm-hmm. And that was a big moment because nobody ever did that for Dean. Nobody ever loved him enough to be honest with him. Mm-hmm. Because Dean is the kind of a brooding character that makes things emotionally expensive and storms off and whatever. And then go kill a demon. And so I did my first episode, and I love Jared Padalecki. I'd casually known him and really grew to be good friends with him. And he was like, this character is going to really, people are going to love him. And there is a Supernatural convention. I was like, you guys do conventions for these things? Like, yeah. And he's like, they're really a big deal. And the fans love them. Like 5,000 people come to a show. There's one in Birmingham, England, that I'm going to that I'll call and have them book you for. And so I went, and I think only one of my episodes had aired. And I went out, and you have to do basically 45 minutes of stand up at these things. Like, you go out and do a panel, solo panel. And I did, and I was shitting myself before I went on stage because I was like, they won't know who I am. I did one episode.
And it's such a different medium to what you're used to.
Yeah. I mean, even that time, television was new to me too. Mm-hmm. TV and film were separate. Also, I knew a lot of people watched this on demand. Mm-hmm. So maybe they hadn't gotten to my episode yet because it had just aired. So I was just really nervous that I would go out there and people would do this. who is that? And which is also a very common actor thing. It's the imposter syndrome. We always think that people, it's why I would never, if you ever hear a story about me going up to somebody and saying, do you know who I am? I would rather be beaten to death. As a matter of fact, I was beaten up by a cop in Vancouver in 2011. And that's so much so that somebody else had to tell him. And then I was released.
Yeah.
I was beaten in hell. They didn't do anything. I was apologized to. And actually, it was when I went to shoot my first episode of Supernatural. Anyway, so I went to this convention and went on stage and came out to thunderous applause and started talking. I was talking, and you're supposed to do a little stand-up. And I realized that in the urinals in Europe or penis display boxes, there are no barriers between.
Yeah, it's just a trough.
Some of them are troughs, but most of the modern ones are just bowls with no wall between them, no even half wall, with a spotlight that highlights your dick perfectly. So it's like they're penis display boxes. And so
and
the
music plays when you pee. It's like, oh.
And so I became fascinated by that. And also I was like, it's so interesting about men's privacy is so little cared for that we're just supposed to whip out our dicks in front of each other. And just, I get pee shy so badly. So I would sit there and, or stand there and, of course, look at nine dicks. But no, I wasn't doing that at all. But anyway, so I started talking about that. And it was to a crowd full of women. And I realized, and they were laughing. And I was like, oh, you don't know this because you don't go into the men's bathroom. So, but on that trip, I met Ty. And we, at the convention, we didn't know each other at all. And the whole cast after, we did maybe said three words to each other at the Supernatural convention. And then we went to London for 4 or 5 days afterward. And then I was going on to Turkey with a friend. And he is such a pure, awesome guy. He came up to us. We all went out as a group. And he was like, can I come on your trip with you? And I'm like, that is so ballsy. Yeah. I could never invite myself on somebody's trip because I would be afraid they would begrudgingly tell me yes and then not want me there. But it was just so pure and awesome. And that's who he is. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know him. And it was the beginning of our friendship. And then I started going back to the show. And I started realizing that the Supernatural cast were the people I would see, were seeing the most. I was seeing them at shows, but also I'm now on a 27-person text thread where we know everything's happening to each other's lives. So it gave me a friend group that I couldn't have possibly have imagined. And the kind of love that you get from the Supernatural fandom is also something. I'd known a little bit of fame, but I'd never known cult fame.
Right.
It's also the only fandom, like whenever I get a job, like Garth got a new movie, let's go support him. It doesn't bother me that I'm referred to in online and in person to my face as Garth. And that says a lot about this experience. And while this is happening, you're not really internalizing it. You're like, oh, this is cool. You know, I met Ty, Sam Smith, who plays Mary Winchester, the matriarch on the show, is now one of my closest friends. Mm-hmm. I've just gotten, aside from you, I see these people more than any other people in the whole world, you and Ty. And one day I started thinking about, like, I said no to this.
Right.
Like, and also I struggle with this a little bit, saying no to jobs, because there is, I still feel guilty for doing it, even if it's for a good reason. Like, I got offered the 500th episode of Law and Order, SVU, and I've always wanted to be on that show.
That's Stan's favorite show.
I've always wanted to be on that show. I want to be the killer on that show, though, and I wasn't the killer, but it was the 500th episode of the show, so they were packing it with known actors. Mm-hmm. And I felt so honored, but it was going to cancel a trip I had planned pre-pandemic to England to see my godchild and all my friends there. And so I knew Sam Smith over the years, but we had never had our friendship breakthrough moment. This was in 2020. And there it is. Law and Order. SVU.
Sam's the one I'm...
Oh, the 500th episode.
Did I meet Sam at Burbank?
She has blonde hair.
Yeah, there she is.
Yeah, Sam Smith.
Yeah, I think I met her. She's lovely. She was awesome. Amazing. And I loved her so much. She immediately came up and gave me a hug.
She'd gone through a bit of health stuff, and I reached out to her, and like I said, we were just people who worked together, and she responded very kindly to that, and And I think we both had independently thought, why aren't we better friends? We should be better friends. And we were sort of seeing each other more frequently, but I mean, group settings. And then when I got offered the 500 episode of this, I really wanted to do it, but it would have killed my trip. And also it was like, again, it was post-pandemic. I really struggled with this because it felt ungrateful.
Yeah.
You know, we'd gone through, actors didn't work for nearly 2 years because we were one of the last groups to go back to work because there are 200 people on a crew. And so that's very hard during COVID to
do
if one person gets it,
exactly,
the whole production shuts down, then you have to declare insurance. Like it was just too emotionally, I mean, too financially expensive to go back to work. So it was my first job back. And I, for some reason, with no real basis of friendship, sort of back and forth with Sam, I reached out to her and only her about it. And I told her about it. I was like, I don't know why I need to talk to you about this, but everything in me is I keep coming back to you. And I was like, I don't know if we're there yet. And she was like, oh yeah, we're there. And she was like, what is it? And so I told her, and she was said the most pure, honest thing that I think maybe other actors from my life wouldn't have told me. She was like, you've only mentioned negative things about this and not one moment about being excited to do it. Mm-hmm. You're only mentioning obligation. And when actors get jobs, usually we're all excited that somebody loves us enough. Oh, thank you for validating my existence. Right. And also I get to go play in New York City. But I didn't think of any of that. I only thought about the people I'd be disappointing and that I love so much that I wasn't going to be able to see. And also being ungrateful. Mm-hmm. And that was our friendship breakthrough moment right there, this catalyst for us. And I've had that with so many other people in this cast. And then Ty and I became like inseparable at the very beginning, like just immediately. And over the last 10 years, our relationship evolved to what it is today. And now we're getting married. Yeah. It's just so crazy that this person who was just my friend, now I think about all the time, and he sends me the best messages, and he supports me and loves me unconditionally in the right way, because I would never abuse that.
Yeah.
On our previous podcast, we talked about the validity of unconditional love, but unconditional love has a condition in it, and the fact that you treat that person with respect,
yes,
and their best interests are your best interest. Yes, some hard conversations have to happen. But you and Ty both share that in common for me, is that you are the two people in the world who can tell me hard to hear things, and I don't start from a place of bucking it or self-defense.
Yeah.
I will listen to it, and you've done it for me. I had that thing with you, with my buddy who got in trouble for something, and I was able to talk to you about it, and you heard me. And your feelings are valid because you're feeling them, and they can be talked through easily without defense.
100%.
And so both of you have that in common. Ty was the first person in my entire life, and that I ever had that with. Mm-hmm. But I say just a friend, the best friend I'd ever had.
Right.
And now we're going to be old men together, which is so crazy.
I love Ty.
He's the best.
He's so wonderful.
He's just the most wonderful. When
I think the first time I met him, it's just like you and I had notoriously, we would just talk for hours and hours and hours, and he like fit into that so well. I could talk to him for hours and hours and hours. Like I immediately knew why you guys were so close, but it's like he just fit into that so well. There was no awkwardness. He's the first person I met of your friends that I was like, whoa, like really, really magnetic personality. I totally get why he's in your life. Because there have been some people, I mean, most of the people now that you hang out with, I fucking love. But there have been some people along the wayside that I'm like, not sure about this one.
And I know exactly who you're talking about. And we're not friends anymore. Yeah. That wasn't a deep friendship.
I came into your life and started fucking.
Exactly. You started weed whacking my relationships. Nope.
I just want you to be treated really well by
Thank
people
you. And I feel that,
and sometimes I think you don't even notice like when people are doing shit, so to have somebody to come out, because I also never have been like, I don't think you should be friends with this person. So what I'll do is, hey, how, like when they said this, like how does that make you feel? Because that was fucking wildly uncomfortable for me.
But it comes from a place of questioning, not of judgment.
Yeah,
like how can you hear that? and not internalize it. Can you walk me through that process? And then I was like, oh my God. And then I started seeing it. But I was seeing it the whole time with this one person, but I couldn't really... And this is not the person I talked about on the last podcast. Yeah. I guess there's... Actually, I don't have a lot of these.
No, you don't. I mean, mostly everybody is great.
I definitely feel... But getting back to Ty, it was the first time in my life I felt I could just say anything. Mm-hmm. And it didn't have to be right. And a couple times my behavior wasn't good in public. And... because I was annoyed about other things. And one time in particular that was very hard for me to deal with. We're in a restaurant and I didn't want to be there. And somebody was talking and I was addressing it like vocally. And it was such an asshole thing to do. And this guy tried to fight me. And Ty was like, I'll sit down, I'll fuck you up. And then we got home. He's like, okay, by the way, you made a choice for me. And if you know that you're making that choice, you can always make this choice. I will always come to your physical defense. But you could have made another choice. But mm-hmm. if you're aware of it, cool, make that choice. But if you're not aware of it, you're making a choice for me. And I was like, I don't want to make a choice for you. And it stopped that behavior. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have an excuse for being in a bad mood and being somewhere. And it's not something that's the thing. It's not my operating normal, but I did it. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about behaviors and forgiving yourself for stuff is sometimes you do things that are so out of your character. And the reason why they bother you is because it's not who you are.
Right.
It's so out of your character. And I don't want to, like I always say, I don't want to be somebody's bad memory. And I fucked up these people's night and made them angry for no reason at all. But Ty, out of love, defended me. And if he had to fight this guy, he would have. Because the guy would have whooped my ass. And and then just addressed it so beautifully. He's like, you're making a choice for me. And so recently, it was after Hawaii, all these pieces started to come into place about, because when you live your life, like a lot of us live a life unobserved. And like this thing was good, this thing was bad. But I sat down and made this common thread about the absolute... how much my life would be different if I had stuck with no, if mm-hmm. I had come from a place of no and stuck with a place of no. And this through line of this TV show that I don't watch, I'm not a fan of, it's because I know everybody on it. Like the last thing, I spend so much time with these people, the last thing I want to do is watch them pretend in my spare time. But it's just the job that's changed my life so profoundly and given me so much more than I ever... gave it. Mm-hmm. And it's just fascinating to me. And so, and it really is that, like to be able to, and it's also a really great feeling to be able to pinpoint an exact, you know, that movie Sliding Doors, you probably never saw it. Did you? This woman hasn't seen anything. I just showed her Overboard the other night and you loved it, didn't you?
I loved it.
So guys, if you've never seen Overboard with Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, it's I cannot recommend it
so
enough.
So good. It holds up. Like it you really
said, moms don't
holds
leave.
Up. Yeah, what DJ learned about me is I just did not... A, we just didn't really watch TV or movies that much growing up.
Were you guys but shakers?
But also, maybe we did. I just don't remember most of my childhood. Like, I truly don't have a recollection. Most of what I remember from my childhood is just home videos that I've seen. I'm like, oh, yes, that's a memory that I have. But trauma makes you dissociate and black everything out. So there are some movies that I'm like, I'm pretty sure I've seen that, but I have no recollection of it. But Overboard, I hadn't seen yet.
So I decided that, well, I asked if we were going to do a movie night. We should do a movie, a sort of a weekly thing where each of us shows a movie that means something to us.
Or that the other person had never seen before or whatever.
And so Overboard was my first pick and we're watching it. And Kelly was like, I think I understand you a little bit better now, like from like the third scene.
Because I'm like... every character in this movie is somehow you.
I love it so much. I can't recommend it enough. And like the other movies on my list are the original Arthur with Dudley Moore is a big deal to me. Can't Buy Me Love.
Meanwhile, my movie. List is first we're watching My Cousin Vinny.
I've never seen it.
Second, we're watching Wayne's World.
I saw that, but I saw it when it was originally out.
Well, and that's part of our little invisible string theory. You were Garth on Supernatural. I have Party on Garth tattooed on my arm.
Party on Garth is my very favorite episode of Supernatural because I got to play it.
I watched it.
I got to drink and pretend to be drunk. And when you pretend to be drunk, you feel drunk. And it was about a monster you could only see when you were loaded. And that was the episode that Mr. Fizzles was on.
Oh, yeah. I did a photo shoot for you with Mr. Fizzles.
And those mittens that you guys can, that so many of you bought and we raised money for St. Jude. From stands She took the photos from the that I, when I was posing with those Mr. Fizzle's mittens. So there is an invisible string here.
Yeah. We both have bee tattoos, unrelated. You worked with my brother's best friend, whom I've known for 25
That's
years.
That's right, and I'm still working with him.
Yep. We both worked and are friends with Jim Jeffries.
Chris is our the editor for our the movie that we're doing.
DJ worked at Ponderosa. I was in a Ponderosa commercial.
Oh, yeah. We just found that out like 3 days ago.
DJ loves Diane Franklin. I know Diane Franklin.
Diane Franklin is the girl that he's in love with, or that he should be in love with, and Better Off Dead, the John Cusack character. Yeah. And she's never seen it. That's also on the list.
Yes, I meant to watch that a couple months ago because it's my friend's mom.
It's so good. $2. I want my $2.
I don't know what that means, but I'm going to love this episode once I see the movie.
Once you see it, you'll never forget. I want my $2.
Yeah, last part of the invisible string theory, I am unqualified to have a real job.
Oh, and that's the most true of all.
Sorry, back to Supernatural.
But anyway, I just wanted to take this part of this episode to just thank you guys so much. And so many of you I haven't met, and you don't we just get a wall of love back from you. And, you know, you send us messages on social media and you come to our shows, and I may not get any FaceTime with you. So I've never really gotten an opportunity to say this out loud, how much this has mean to me and how much it's changed my life. It's given me a friend group. It's given me a platform for my new projects. It's given me an income at a time when Hollywood has become this place where I'm not getting the kind of roles that I want, and so I can go to these shows and pay my mortgage. So I'm getting so much from you, and I just want to thank you for this. And it really just taught me to, like, if you can say yes and it's not going to impact your life greatly. Sometimes a yes makes more sense than a no. Sometimes a no is an absolute no, mm-hmm. but this no was a knee-jerk no, mm-hmm. and I would have missed so much, and my life would be so much less mm-hmm. had I not done Supernatural.
And isn't that such an exciting thought, too, that you're potentially only one yes away from changing your life completely?
That's really awesome.
Like, isn't that really fucking cool that especially in this day and age, like, you truly can change your life at the drop of a dime. You can fake it till you make it. You can just decide that this is who you want to be now. Start acting like that. Like, it is really cool how you can reinvent yourself, but you really are so close to anything that can change your
life. You're only one yes away from changing your life. That's great. So if we extrapolate that, so if you want to be a veterinarian and don't want to go to veterinary school, just go to a small town and say you're a veterinarian.
Yeah. Just put a glove on.
Make the
put
choice.
Your hand up that ass.
Say yes to a new town.
Yeah, I mean, honestly.
I'm a veterinarian. Let me prove it. Give me your cattle ticket.
Is that not the start of, like, so many true crime stories? It's like, he wanted a new life, so he picked up and moved to a small town where nobody knew him or his schedule or who all the women were coming to his house.
Or the people buried in Greece.
Let's do a fun thing. Can we look up the cast of Supernatural, and DJ will just tell us the first thought that comes to his mind about each person?
Yeah, perfect. I love that. Oh, look, it's a snow cone. Oh, the snow cone thing. I forgot to tell you. What I learned on that movie was...
you can have 4 snow cones a day, otherwise it's dangerous.
Okay, you know what I learned. No, the snow cone thing was when you have heat stroke as a man, if you take a snow cone with no toppings on it and put your balls into it, it lowers your body temperature immediately. So you can go from seeing stars to being completely normal in about 30 seconds.
That's my favorite porn category.
Yep. Balls on snow cones. Balls on snow cones and kittens with mittens. These are a few of my favorite things.
All right, well, first we'll go with, you know, the first two. Jensen.
Jensen is good at everything. So in one episode, this is actually a great idea, Kelly Blackheart.
Thanks.
Jensen, so I have an episode, it was I can't remember what season it was, but I had to tap dance with Jensen. And so,
I didn't see that episode.
So here's how it happened. I am at Burbank at the convention there, and a producer from the show happens to be visiting past my table. He's like, oh, by the way, can you dance? And I'm like... Yeah, I can dance. I mean, I'm a pretty good mover.
Like, I'm gay.
Yeah, exactly. Hello.
Of course I can
dance. But so I get to I fly into Vancouver, I go through the check, you know, you go through immigration, and then you go to the production office and get all your schedules and all that before you go to the hotel. And they're like, oh, so we have a short choreographed routine that you're going to do with Jensen in a dream sequence. And I'd seen it on the thing, and it says brief tap dancing interlude. And I panicked a little bit. It was a 3-minute choreographed tap dance routine. And I was...
Which is short compared to 10 minutes.
Yeah. And when I freaked out about it, they're like, we're going to give you an hour. I mean, you guys have an hour of rehearsal built in.
An hour to learn a 3-minute routine?
I'm not joking.
That's fast.
And so then they said this, but blank producer said that you said you could dance. And I'm like, I grew up gay in the South. If I could do that, I would not have survived. If you're going to add tap dancing to that? No, I avoided that like the plague.
Also, tap dancing is not just dancing.
So anyway,
it's a specific skill.
Here's the thing about Jensen. He said we needed to tap dance every day. They gave me my hat and my cane. I practiced every night. Okay, there we go. Anyway, he was off 15 minutes before me. And he went to rehearsal first. By the time I got there, he had the whole fucking thing down. I was so mad.
So he's really
good. He's good at everything.
Well, this cast is like wildly musically talented too. Like Jensen and Jared can both sing, right?
Yeah.
And then you can sing really well. I'm sure there are other people. I mean, it also doesn't surprise me when actors are good singers. I think a lot of people are surprised by that. But so many people grew up in like musical theater and stuff like that where you should be a triple threat.
I avoided it to avoid harm.
I know, you're a really good singer.
And I don't even like musicals. A few years ago, well, a long time ago actually, I was in London on a press tour and they got us, I think I told this, they got us tickets to ABBA when it was first like in the West End, ABBA the musical. Mm-hmm. And 5 minutes into it, I was like, just say it! Just say that you want to go buy a loaf of bread. I don't like singing for no reason. And it's probably because I'm worried about being harmed. Okay, so...
Why is a chorus line then on the list of movies you're going to show
Patreon,
me?
Our Patreon people see this, right?
Yeah.
So that's a bit of the... Anyway, he knew all this stuff, and he's amazing and can do everything so much that it's disgusting. And he's handsome and he smells good. Okay, so now we'll move on to Jared. Jared is like a giant puppy. He's
got Labrador Retriever energy.
He really does. He's just kind and honest. And he was my neighbor when I was doing Man in the High Castle. He lived in the tower next to me. And I found that out because I was buying melatonin and I think he was buying deodorant at the shop at the Shoppers Drug Mart, which is between us. And he's like a drinking buddy. I always just have a great time around Jared. He's just an easy, easy hang. And he... is also between the two the biggest. So these boys are notorious pranksters, and he's a bigger prankster. Somebody put mayonnaise in my door handle of my trailer when I had werewolf claws on. So I hate mayonnaise.
You hate mayonnaise.
It might as well have been shit. Like, yeah. I hate mayonnaise more than any substance on the earth. Like I said, I hate it more than homophobia. Like, I hate it. I really, really hate mayonnaise. And so somebody put it perfectly where I couldn't see it. And so I'm standing there going with werewolf claws on that were glued to my knuckle.
So if somebody sees you in the hallway, they're like, he's transforming.
Yeah, exactly. It was probably the most realistic acting I've ever done. By the way, there's nothing more embarrassing than turning into a werewolf before the special effects are added, because you're doing it in front of like crew and big guys pulling cable. And I mean, what people don't realize about a set, it's a little bit of a boys club, because most you got to be pretty, you know, these giant guys like bruh, 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 these actors. We are like, the slang for actor is meat puppet. Bring in the meat puppet. If you're a crew member, you kind of think of actors as the least important part of the the project. And so we're sort of a necessary evil, because otherwise it would be people pulling cable and lining up cameras.
It'd be a documentary.
Exactly.
About
and
setting
so,
up a set.
But turning into a werewolf in front of people who are like looking at their watches because they were running late, they want to go home. And if you don't, it looks so stupid, but if you don't commit to it, it won't cut. So it looks like this. Like having to do that over and over and over again in front of people who are doing this.
But then you play them the clip that's like, I don't remember the words of it. I'm not your fan.
Oh yeah. Why don't you treat me like any person on the street? Because I'm really not one of your fans. No, but if you don't commit to it, you have to commit. Otherwise it won't cut.
Yeah,
it looks ridiculous. You look bored and not happy to be there. But if you do commit to it, you look stupid.
Right.
They're
not seeing the magic.
Yeah, yeah. And also they've seen all your shit and they're bored with it. Misha is so a lot of our fans have crushes on the top three guys. And Misha is my fuck at a fuck, marry, kill. He's just charming. I find him adorable.
Oh, who's your marry, kill?
I won't say. And I just love him. He's all melty and sweet, and I enjoy seeing him. He also was the first person to introduce. I didn't like Indian food, and we were in England together in Liverpool last year, and he took me to an Indian restaurant, and it changed my mind. I loved it.
Nice.
It was amazing. Mark Shepard, I did not like for the first 2 years I knew him. If you've been to Saudi Arabia, he went there on a gold-plated plane with the person who owns it. But that he knows this about himself, right? And so years into knowing him, I was with a friend's four-year-old at the, what's the name of that yogurt place that we all love out here that I never go to, but people love it? That frozen yogurt place?
Yogurtland?
No, not Yogurtland. It's the name brand one.
Oh, Pinkberry?
Pinkberry. I was at the Pinkberry in that little plaza where the Trader Joe's is in Studio City. Mm-hmm. And this little boy was like, I got to go. And I knew what he meant. Yeah. This kid was going to shit his pants. So I pick him up and I'm aimlessly running through this parking lot, not knowing where to go. I thought I was going to go to Trader Joe's, but I didn't think we were going to make it. There's a cigar shop and Mark steps out of the cigar shop with like an angel sent him. He's like, this your first kid bathroom emergency? I'm like, yes. He's like, run straight in there and tell them you want the bathroom immediately. Don't ask. And save the day. Jeffrey Dean Morgan plays the patriarch on the family and also just amazing. I knew his wife, Hillary, before I knew him. From back in the day when TRL was a thing. Jim Beaver is kind of like the grandfather of the show. He's cool as hell. I love him. Alex,
go to show more too, because I think that
Alex is there's a lot. I can't get through
everybody.
Have to do everybody. I'll just pick people.
Yeah.
Alex is like my little brother. He played Jack on the show. A funny thing that happened is I have the werewolf teeth I had for one episode. I couldn't put my mouth over. There were these enormous werewolf teeth, and I had to attack him, and I'm over him, and I'm going, arr, arr, arr. There's a lot of that, and I was like, I'm gonna drool in this motherfucker. You better cut. The spit is dripping down the fangs. I was like, I'm going to drool on his face, and they called cut, and I went, took him out. I'm like, I'm really trying to not to drool on you, and he was like, thank you, and it bonded us. Ruth is amazing. She just had a baby. I'll skip to Mark Pellegrino, I adore. Sam Smith, I talked about. Mm-hmm. Just a wonderful human being and like a mixture of my mother and my sister and friend.
She just like is one of those people that has really amazing energy too. Like you can tell, like I could just tell that she was genuine. You know those people?
The crazy thing about looking at this list of people is that I know every single one of them. Like I was... like know every single one of these people, and none of us work together. Like I've worked with like maybe four people on this list because the show was on the air for 15 years, and I guest spotted for 8 of those years.
Right.
But we know each other from real life, and I just there's not a person on this show who I do not adore, and that has never happened. There's always one. Well, on Legit too, I loved everybody on Legit.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that our young baby PA on Legit was the second AD on the movie I just did in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. You sent me a picture of you with him.
Yeah. Small world. Yeah, I love this guy.
That's crazy.
But he was like a little baby when we met him on this show. And that's also what a good show does. A good show bonds you forever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like Charmed or something like that where now they're telling things about each other. Like, in 20 years, we'll have literally nothing but good stuff to say about each other because it was so positive.
Right. It is such a unique experience, too, to be, like, because most of the time you do a movie or a show, but then you're done and you walk away from it. Whereas with this, with the conventions and stuff like that, you guys truly are like a troupe.
Yeah,
essentially that
we're on tour together all the time.
You're closer now than you ever were when you were doing the show
because we didn't know each other. Yeah. I never worked with Ty on the show.
Yeah,
we were in this. We had one season overlap, but we never worked together. It's just I look at all these faces and 1,000 memories, and this would be days if I did.
No, you don't have to. Everybody, you want to give a shout out to Adam?
Adam Rose.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know about Adam Rose?
Because he was at the Burbank convention.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about him.
Oh, yeah. Adam Rose is a new addition to our are...
He was on the show, right?
Yeah, Adam Rose was on the show, but he was on in the early days, and I think only in maybe one or two episodes. I don't think he's is he on this list? No. Adam, so we just, before this last tour, we all got polled who we wanted on it. Everybody wanted Adam Rose. Adam Rose is the blue cardigan guy that you see on TikTok and Instagram. And the cool thing about him is that in 2016, I think, we were coming from a convention in England, and his convention money got stolen from the hotel by somebody who worked there. And Scotland Yard came out, it has such a big, vivid moment because I was so upset because I lived in England, so I felt proprietary about it. And I was like, this will be solved for you. But they just let it go. But while we were on that, he had to stay a few days later to deal with all this, and he told me about his big plans for social media. He was like, I've got this idea, and now he is a giant social media star, and I love him so much because he said he was going to do something, and he did it. Mm-hmm. And I respect that so much. And now on the tour, he offers a social media seminar, and I hate social media so much. A lot of it's because I think that it's a lot of garbage, mm-hmm. and meaning that it's... A lot of it is meant to make people feel bad about themselves. It's almost like I'm going to show you how ugly you are and at what you don't have, so you'll follow me to sort of... It's an envy follow, right? A lot of that. And a lot of it's not real, too. Mm-hmm. When I first joined social media, I saw a set that I've worked on in North Hollywood that's a private plane that people were flying on. I'm like, oh, lies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's super trendy now, is people just going to... airplane sets, or there are now there are businesses where you can go and rent the space for an hour or whatever, and they have multiple different sets that you can take pictures in. So yes, take everything you see on social media with a grain of salt.
But you love it because you get to see people who don't have an outlet, right? Like people who, like, you find talent on there. Like, you're like, listen to this person sing, and they're really talented.
I mean, I make it a priority to not follow people that make me feel badly about myself.
But my algorithm, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but it used to be babies being scared of that dancing cactus, and that was probably my own doing. But I get douchebags with their shirts off, with an umbrella hair, and all that stuff. Like, that's my... I'm like, how am I generating... I don't know what I did.
Well, I think sometimes it just takes the algorithm a while, and I don't think you spend much time scrolling.
So I just get a lot of stuff I don't want to see. Yeah. Now I watch one person win a slot machine jackpot, and it's all of it. It's my whole feed is slot machine jackpots. So you're right. I don't engage it enough, but I'm going to take Adam's seminar because he's found his voice and has found his platform in it. And he's enjoying it, and it's provided for him. And I'm interested in that. I mean, and also a big reason is because of this. I have not had a project like this podcast that I love so viscerally and believe in so much. And social media is a way for people to sort of engage with us, first of all, but also more people to start enjoying what we're doing.
Right. It's a necessary evil at this point. You have to be on social media if you want to promote things.
It's very hard for me to get past the negative stuff of it, because I'm the kind of person that when I see something negative, I'm just like... Also, there's a desperation there, and people, like, I see people staging videos and all that stuff just for attention, and it's the wrong attention.
Is it, if they get paid a lot of money?
But if it's not genuine to who you are, Yeah, I think it's wrong for me.
Sure. Yeah.
All of these things are just if they're right for me or not right for me. Like, if you do stuff, I don't have to engage in it.
Yeah.
And that's a big reason why I don't engage in social media, because so much of it is not for me. And you're telling me, and you said this before, it's because I haven't engaged it enough to find my algorithm.
Yeah.
And anything that's disingenuous to me, I find repulsive.
For sure.
Professional porn I can't watch. I think we talked about this. I can only watch amateur stuff because the noises are wrong in professional porn. It makes me think you're not having a good time, and I don't want to engage with you if you're doing something out of obligation or coming from a not genuine place, and just in every aspect of my life.
Yeah, my For You page is like flawless at this point. It is so rare that I come across a video that is not specifically tailored for me, which is then the other side of the problem, right? Because
you don't see around
because every video is a dopamine hit. This is exactly what I was looking for. This is exactly that's how what it I'm addicts people, in,
right?
And it gets addicting. Yeah. So
see, when I promise myself that when the plane lands, I'll never ever go right to social media.
Yeah.
Because everybody does it, and it's like their eyes change. It's a dopamine hit. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, and I have ADHD, so I'm constantly looking for dopamine hits that don't involve any effort.
I mean, yeah, and I know that every generation has said that the generation before them is going to hell, but the absolute lack of attention span is alarming. Mm-hmm. It really is, and it has to be from that.
Oh, 100%. It's
book readership is down. Like things that, like, because it's too much of a time investment. People watch 3 seconds of a video and decide whether or not they like it.
Yeah.
And there are all these people on the internet, on TikTok now, saying, this is what you have to do to get people to watch 35 seconds of your video, which is 4 years in TikTok time.
Yeah, that's the hardest part for me, because when people have like little story times on TikTok or whatever, it's the big to-do at the beginning of the video where it's like they're getting into their car, getting out as it's like, just sit down and tell the video. But you need that. You need the view to constantly
change. But also they're doing it because TikTok and those things require a time minimum to monetize it.
No, I know. But
so
I'm
when
talking.
People are like getting their coffee ready and doing this. It's like, but here's how it likens to history. In Victorian times, you got paid by the word when you wrote books. So it's the reason why a sentence is 47 sentences long and has 92 commas in it. It's not because people communicated differently. It's because you got paid more.
Right.
So is it worse? Yes, it's worse.
Yeah, I mean, I while those videos aren't for me, like the stage stuff is really annoying. I hate prank videos online because of, I mean, I like good-spirited pranks. I hate mean-spirited pranks. I think they're really, like, especially couple pranks and stuff like that where you're being really terrible to somebody and it's like, gotcha, I fucking hate that. So there's a lot of stuff that I don't
smacking
like.
People in the face or punch, like, ball-checking somebody. Let me tell you, motherfucker, you want to get me from zero to rage, ball-check me. I will pick out. I would be in jail. Yeah. I would pick up something and brain your ass. I hate being... It also, it's humiliating.
For sure. Yeah, I don't like any of that stuff. But that being said, obviously there's a market for those videos. People enjoy watching them. And I can't really fault people for doing whatever they need to do to make money because it's fucking hard right now.
I get it.
That was my point, getting into this.
The judgment is not... I'm not going on the internet telling people my thoughts about this.
Yeah.
They're my own thoughts. It's for like, sure. For me, it feels too icky for me to engage in.
Yeah. And you don't necessarily have to engage. I mean, you can... I mean, I think most people, especially anybody who's on TV, they kind of post and then they disengage from it. You really shouldn't be in your own comments. You shouldn't be checking.
And that's the other thing. I came up in a time when things were written about you, they were written about you in the fucking New York Times,
right?
Which hurt pretty bad.
Couldn't escape it,
which really hurt. But also I was in my 20s when that happened, and I can't imagine being 13. I hear this a lot. Julia Roberts I saw this thing about her that was going around, and it was just her and her niece having brunch, and people were so shitty and just saying the meanest things about how she's aging, how she's looking. She looks amazing, by the way, and what a class act. And she was like, it hurt me so bad, and I was shocked at how much it hurt me. And then I thought about, I'm 50, and it's hurting me.
And what would this,
a 13-year-old doesn't have any defenses for that.
Yeah.
There's no way to compartmentalize that. So all of that is so confusing for me that it makes me not want to engage it. If I have a hard time checking the mail, if I build up something around that, which is something I have to do, and I have a negative impression of social media, I cannot check social media.
Yeah. Just post a video and then throw your phone in the ocean like regular people
this
do.
This is my 30th phone this month.
That's the benefit of having money. You just throw your phone away every time you post.
Oh, what a bright side looker you are.
They call it post and ghost.
Oh, post and ghost. Yeah.
That's like hit it and quit it.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. Yeah, fuck social media, literally.
Yeah. You just wipe your dick on the blinds and leave.
Are we at time?
Yes.
Great.
Guys, So this was our 10th. Was this episode 10?
Yeah.
Yes. So guys, I'm so thankful that you're engaging with us, that you're listening to us. This is 10 episodes in, and I'm as excited as the day that we started.
Yeah. It was so good to get back here.
And I just want to end this with just saying how absolutely grateful I am that you're all in my life. And I could, as my 13-year-old self would be fucking floored.
Yeah.
If he could look at what my life is like now and the kind of engagement I get and people being happy just because I'm there.
Yeah.
Like would have blown his little mind.
That's why I keep the picture of me on my phone.
Oh, that's really cool.
Cause you know,
I went through an awkward phase at 13. She needs to know what's going on. I had an unfortunate haircut and a chipped front tooth. And so I don't want to see that. It's really bad. It's really
like,
bad.
Like, I love you, kid, but I don't want to look at you.
I ever. And also, I side with the bullies a little bit when I see those photos.
You're like, if you walked up to me right now, I would drop kick your ass. Exactly.
I would hate crime you.
I would give you an atomic wedgie.
So guys, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Also, we're current. Happy being current. I'm happy being current.
Yeah.
So engage with us, and we'll talk about you in a nice way.
Yeah. Every month we're going to be doing a live happy hour on Zoom. So we haven't picked the date yet for this month, but we will be soon. So join us at patreon.com/loadedpod and check us out on social media, where DJ will be hanging out at Loaded Pod.
I'll learn. Bye.
Bye.
Sit on down and pour yourself a glass.
And tune in to your favorite podcast,
where things will be misquoted
and opinions ain't sugar-coated.
Cause DJ and Kelly are locked and probably loaded.